Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 347. I'm Steve Borsch. I'm back, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Phil Wilson.
Hi, Steve.
And our buddy Graham Thickens is down at the boat show this morning at in Minneapolis, buying a surfboard or something. I don't know.
I got to ask him about his priorities. I really got to ask him about his priorities.
Hey, it only comes around once a year. Come on.
That's true. That's true.
You know,
isn't it multiple days? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it opened yesterday, I think. Isn't it like Friday through Sunday?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. So, we're going to miss his perspective.
What is the definition of the best day ever?
The day you buy your boat and the day you sell your boat.
It's the second best day. Yes, right.
Those are equal. Yeah.
They're equal, yes.
Well, anyway. You know, the old joke about what is a boat? It's a hole in the water you pour money into.
Yes.
And I got to tell you that my old boss had a boat with teak on it. Yeah. And every single spring, the guy'd be out there stripping the boat and putting teak on it. Finally, he said, I'm not doing that anymore. He started paying for it.
Teak oil.
Yeah, it would be like, you know, he'd pay, you know, $1,000 every spring to have the boat taken care of. And, oh, my God. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
I know. Well, you know, I know some guys, a couple of guys that probably have enough money to buy boats and keep them in the water. And that's Scott Littman and Dan Mallon from Magnet 360 and Minnesota Cup fame and all that. These guys sold their company to an India-based firm for $50 million.
Not bad.
Not bad at all.
Yeah.
You know, obviously they got a...
$37 million now, $17 million over the next 2 years.
For performance.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Yep, not bad at all. Well, essentially, they're a holding company that's pulled together all these other firms and focused on the Salesforce CRM platform. But anyway, yeah. I'm really happy for these guys.
Yeah,
it's a good exit.
Congratulations to them.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, they're not really exiting. I mean, they have to work for a couple more years, but...
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure we...
I think they'll be okay. I think they'll pull through.
Yeah, we'll see them pop up in three years or so with something else.
Right.
You know?
Could be. You never Maybe. Know. They may just lay back and enjoy. You never know.
Yeah. You never know.
You never, ever know. So Target CEOs, I skipped ahead there a little bit, guys, but the Target CEO, I found this interesting. He's going door to door now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's not selling. He's just kind of rifling through people's lives there, right?
Right.
He wants to see what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I found this to be a puff piece. And if he really wanted to know what's going on, he should just show up at his stores and he can see what the problems are. They're very obvious and they've been the same for years.
Well, what are they, Tim?
Their merchandising selection, especially in grocery, is not sufficient for most customers. And so if they want to be the, you know, one-stop destination, they've got some catching up to do to compete with even people like Walmart, who have a better selection.
Right.
And, you know, grocery is going to get very competitive here this year in the Twin Cities with Hy-Vee coming in. They're building a couple of stores around, you know, the area, one of which is, I think it's what, an Eakin or Apple Valley? I think it's Apple Valley. Anyway, they're, you know, another chain that is supposedly very good and they'll definitely put both Target and Cub, you know, they'll challenge them, I think, for customers, at least on the grocery side.
Who do you think?
Hy-Vee.
Hy-Vee? Oh, yeah. Hy-Vee.
Yeah. Yeah, Aldi's been putting stores in, but the mm-hmm.
one and thing Little that, is coming to another German grocery. Right.
Well, the one thing they had in this story that is germane to technology is their beefing up of their specialty IT workforce, but half those engineers and technology workers will be in the U.S. and the other half in Bangalore, India.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
And
but I'm not sure if that's going to really do a whole lot, because if you look at that other story, which is the very in-depth look at what went wrong in Canada.
Yeah, we're going to put a link in the show notes, folks, to that, because it's a really long but very good story if you want to know why Target failed in Canada.
Yeah, I mean, it failed because, in a nutshell, because the people that went up there had no experience in international, which is not surprising because that's the first expansion that they did. They assumed that the market would be similar to the U.S., and Canada is not. And then their IT selection was just a terrible mistake. So all of those things contributed to, you know, the demise of the Canadian venture.
Yep.
And it's just, it's amazing the amount of arrogance and just hubris that went along with that whole project. It's just, it's crazy. So
I always hearken back to, you know, sort of the, it's the script that you have as a CEO when you walk into a new company, I guess, is we've got to be more nimble. We have to be more agile.
Right.
We have to throw away, you know, what we've done in the past. It's like, well, that's considered, I guess, growth. That's what you do. Yeah. So,
well, they've got some real serious problems because, you know, Amazon is one of the best firms at, you know, merchandising and making sure that they have the right selection of goods.
Right.
And then delivering those in a seamless online, you know, venue. So, you know, Target does have some advantages over online, and they can certainly compete with them online. But you know, I don't know. They haven't shown yet that they're making an effort to kind of turn the corner and have a sustainable business going forward. So I think this year will be interesting to watch what happens.
Yeah,
because it'll either turn the corner or it won't.
Well, and I think it only stands to reason that you add more tech IT jobs simply because, you know, more of your business is online. So I don't think that's a big surprise. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Well,
Julio had a great story about a St. Paul native's tech startup that wants to kid-proof your smartphone. And I don't know how Julio hears about these folks, but this guy, Matthew Mogul, created a, looks almost like an iPad smart cover. It's a cover for your laptop, which protects the keyboard from kids so they don't spill stuff in the keyboard and ruin your laptop and so on. It's called the Kid Lid, and mm-hmm. now it's available in a couple hundred Target stores and Staples and some other places. And this guy is looking to now, that was a very successful Kickstarter project also. And now he is doing the same thing with a Kid Lid case for the iPhone.
And it wasn't clear to me exactly what the Kid Lid case did, though.
For the phone,
other than block the home button, I'm not 100% sure either, Tim. So it's the question that I had. Is it?
Yeah.
So I guess that maybe
it's peanut butter proof, or
well, and it's a drop proof.
Maybe it's a drop proof thing. Yeah. I guess.
And I
but most okay.
Well, the Kid Lid for the laptop, I thought was a brilliant product. This one, I think there's a lot of competition in the you know, sort of secure
case market. The case business. Yeah.
But,
I'm not sure. What did the Kid Lid do for the computer? I guess I never really.
Well, there's a link in there.
There it is. Yep.
And so if you click on Kid Lid, it'll pop up Julio's story, or it'll take you to the kidlid.com site, and you can see more about it. But it just covers the keyboard. I mean, you know, I've thrown out more than one keyboard. I remember my daughter when she was, I don't know, three or something. She came in, Daddy, and she knocked over, I don't know what I was, what soda, a Mountain Dew or a Coke or something. I don't know. And it went directly in my keyboard. Well, no matter what I did, I couldn't clean the damn thing. So I just bought a new one because, you know, the keys kept sticking.
Right. And, so this is like this is just a plastic lid that goes over the top.
Yeah.
Of the...
I hate to go all, you know, just like those guys on Shark Tank on this, but is there anything proprietary about this?
Looks like a piece of plastic.
It looks like a piece of plastic that's got a shape that's like, maybe there's a patent. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
It is a good idea. I give you that, but I don't, is this protectable in any way?
I don't know.
So.
I don't know.
Well, wish them luck.
Yeah, really, very much so.
Yeah.
Don't be a contrarian.
I think that iPhone case would be good for senior citizens.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You know, because Yeah. No, I think so. Because my mother, with her, you know, she has a smartphone problem, and hitting the home button is one of them. So I think that, you know, this at times that are inadvertent. So covering it up. Of course, you need the home button for certain things. But
yeah. Yes. According to the site, this case provides great impact protection. Plus, our patented. It says patented.
Oh, okay.
Kid mode functionality, which allows quick blocking of the home button. That's it. It covers the home button.
So it doesn't cover Safari, where you can get into just about anything that the world has to offer. They should have like a kid version of Safari.
Yeah, it says it's got a raised top lip. No need for a glass screen. I don't get it.
Well, but you know, right now you can set up your iPad or iPhone so that you can lock out, you know, have only one app present. And I'm sure you've seen now with the latest revelations about what Apple's doing in the education space. I would assume, because Google's doing so well with Chrome OS and Chromebooks, is they're allowing multi-user accounts on iOS for education only at this point.
Why would they make it education only? It seems like a feature that would be important at a, you know, just a regular household where you might be sharing an iPad.
Precisely. I think my own opinion is that it's because I haven't been able to really read anything about why they're limiting it, but I think they're going to work out some of the bugs in terms of what happens with all these different accounts. And I think it's going to be a storage issue over time.
Well, I don't know, because Android and Fire OS has had this feature for some time now, and I haven't heard that that's been a real problem with either of them. It could eat up a lot of space. But with iCloud, I would think that you could offload much of the user stuff to the cloud, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
So the moral to the story is get a 64 gig iPad.
Oh, at least.
Yeah, that's just the normal size. That's the entry level. 128 if you're feeling spendy.
Yeah.
Feeling spendy. Yes, there you go.
There you go.
All right.
Well, we had another, or this is the last story in Minnesota, or no, almost last story in Minnesota.
No. There's another one sort of tenuously in Minnesota.
Tenuously, yeah. It's just kind of a wrap-up of last year. Kathy Grayson did a piece in the Minneapolis-St. Paul Business Journal. About the digital health startup investment has surged in Minnesota, but MedTech is kind of dipping.
You're right.
I guess
right.
Globally. So most of it, I think, is a lot of it driven by the Zipnosis investment, and then there's. I didn't see the investment in Gravy. We used that when we were at HyperIQ. We used that service, so which is a way for employees to navigate the what am I trying to say? Affordable Care Act and insurance.
Yeah. Oh, Obamacare. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Obamacare. I can have a hard time saying that. Sorry.
Really? It is. He even says Obamacare.
I know he does say it. It's just like
proudly. That. He's loud and proud about it.
I suppose.
But it was nice.
It's a legacy item.
But it was nice to see the link in there for Minneapolis Digital Health Startups, you know, that Minnesota's ranked number four in the nation.
Four. Yep.
And that digital health startups nationwide raised a combined $2.8 billion. And it said that Minnesota, $142 million of that. So that's not too bad, but oh well. Well, so
this little lesser known blog. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Connecting the dots. That's right. That's right.
It's in my aggregator.
Yeah,
it is.
I keep up with it.
It's like one of my first blogs ever.
Well, so I did this post only because I've been looking at historical stuff, you know, especially in the computer business.
And I was reading this blog when it was on paper.
Wait a minute. So you stole my journal out of my desk. there's a guy named Stuart Scheifele who had a show called Computer Chronicles that was done in San Francisco. and it was done on public broadcasting. And
I keep the day.
Yeah, I remember seeing it a few times during its reign when I was out in California, but I never really saw it anywhere else. And they would have it every once in a while on Twin Cities Public Television, but they never ran it consistently. So it kind of bugged me that you know, there's this cool show out there. But then Tech TV happened, you know, the Leo Laporte and crew show. But anyway, Computer Chronicles did a show called The Internet, revealed in 1993. And so I started watching it. This is, I don't know, a week ago. And at 9 minutes and 37 seconds in, there's a demonstration of Gopher, which was a protocol that was developed at in 1991 by a guy named Mark McCahill, whom I've met, at the University of Minnesota. And
there you go.
And so, you know, this is when the internet was still academic related, it was not commercial yet. And the Gopher protocol was a way to at least organize content in some way. And it became this sort of this ecosystem. Everybody started using it because it was a great way to list out and organize what was sitting in directories. And so the Gopher ecosystem is often regarded as the effective predecessor of the World Wide Web. That was in the Wikipedia article. And I thought that was kind of an interesting thing to bring forth.
Mm-hmm.
So
I always thought Gopher was more like a directory or even a search engine than it was, you know, the web itself, though.
Oh, there's no question. There's no question. Yeah. But again, it was just a way of organizing this information, because the worst thing for any computer scientist or any academic is to live in a world of unstructured data, you know, which drives me crazy, too, when you start looking at network drives when you have access in a company and there's, you know, hundreds of network drives, and they just got shit thrown in there. There's directories and subdirectories everywhere, and you can't find anything, and it's just a crazy maker. Anyway, so what are some other top tech stories there, Mr. Elliott, Mr. Wilson?
So the top one here at the top of the thing is that IBM is buying Ustream. I didn't even know that Ustream was still around.
Oh, but definitely they are. Yeah.
Well, and they're owned by IBM now. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. That's what you were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So what's the deal with that? I mean, what are they going to do? I guess they're going to use it for business use, I guess.
That's the conjecture that there's going to be some sort of enterprise level communication. And it makes a lot of sense when you think about how many companies are, you know, putting on webinars, and they want to find other ways to communicate, but they also want to be able to deliver live events.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if they're going to reveal something, everybody's watched what's happened with the major tech companies, you know, Microsoft and Apple and Google specifically, who have done major events, and you have 100,000 and pretty soon 300,000, and then pretty soon there's millions of people watching these events, and they want to watch them live. They want to watch them as they unfold. And I think it's a smart move on IBM's part. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Well, we will see.
Well, and then another big story, and this was in The Intercept. This is Glenn Greenwald's publication that they started.
One of your favorite blogs, right?
I pay attention. Absolutely. Right. And we all know that, you know, FBI Director James Comey has been coming out with this encryption is bad. And there's a New York and now a California Congress people who have come out in favor of backdoors for the government and actually putting in place laws. Or they're trying anyway, putting in place laws.
I want to keep government away from my back door. They're already there too many times.
Yeah. So. But what these legislators want to do is to make it illegal to sell devices in their states that don't have back doors. So if they're encrypted, you can't sell them in their state. That's what their direction is. Well, here is the interesting thing. The new NSA director, Mike Rogers, Admiral Mike Rogers.
He's got a cool uniform.
He does. He said Thursday that encryption is foundational to the future, and arguing about it is a waste of time.
And so either this guy is really with it, he's got it, he's figured it out, he's a technologist, etc., or there's already a back door that the NSA has put in.
He's saying, look away.
That's right. Yeah, all adopt it. Come on, adopt this encryption thing.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you know, there was just a 60 Minutes thing on about hacking and all the stuff that's going on. And I watch what happens with WordPress, and I will tell you that you have to... Well, I'm not going to reveal my cool thing of the week, but stay tuned because there's some really interesting things going on to people who definitely want encryption, and the world doesn't want to be surveilled, and you know they're not, you know, if corporate espionage is the number one issue facing our nation, facing any nation, any company. Because everybody wants to be able to hack in and find out what's going on. And so encryption is key to our future. So anyway.
Safety is what you're saying.
Yeah, and now the NSA chief agrees, which is pretty unusual based on all the crap that's been going on up to this point. Of course, you know, Tim, when you said that, I thought, well, what they don't know, or what we don't know, is how far along they are with quantum computers. So encryption might be a moot point because they can just run a program on a quantum computer and break it in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So anyway.
There is that.
So tell us about this next story. Symphony Advanced Media Software tracks your digital life through your smartphone, Mike.
Yeah, I saw this online, and I thought it sort of tied in.
It strikes me about how
Netflix does their I guess ratings or user studies, and they use this technology. And it's unclear which apps do this. I would think that if this was true, though, and mainstream apps were using the mic for this kind of research, that, you know, we would see this somewhere else. I'm a little dubious, but if this is the case, I'm kind of concerned that they're actually listening while you're watching television through your smartphone, and then they're aggregating all the data about what you're watching so they can make better decisions on, you know, content that that they will have appear on Netflix. So,
well, see, I'm dubious about this because you know, when I open up my iPhone and I have location services on and, you know, that kind of thing, it'll ask, do you want this on while the app is running or do you want it on all the time? And I always say while the app is running, because then I can force quit the app.
Right.
And, I don't have to worry about the thing tracking me when I don't want it to track. But I don't know how technically they would pull this off.
Yeah.
Unless the app was running.
It's opt-in, yeah. It's definitely an opt-in.
Well, it's opt-in, but the app would have to be running.
Yeah. Right.
So, and it would have to be one of the ones that could still be resident in memory. So if you open up an app that they use for listening, like the Netflix app, and then you open up other apps, you know, 3, 4, 5 other apps, the Netflix one gets shoved into the background, and there's no longer enough RAM, so it gets purged. So even though it's technically still up and running, it's really not running. It's not functional. So I don't know how they can actually do this and have it be a reliable method for them technically. Yeah. So,
well, let's keep an eye out for
this. No kidding. Yeah, especially here, just a sec, I have to adjust my tinfoil hat. Just a minute.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
All right.
There we go.
All right.
So I put this next one in here just for you, Steve. And it's this may be a great podcast app. We don't know. It's called Music Memos, just released from Apple. And it's supposedly a middle ground between GarageBand, which of course is quite complicated even on the iPhone, and the normal voice memo, which is dumb simple and you can't do much with.
Huh.
It's targeted at musicians, but I think that podcasters can also use this thing.
I'm going to go take a look at it. I didn't pay any attention.
It's
free from the App Store.
Yeah.
So I expect a full report next week.
All right. I'll definitely do it.
It could be his cool thing of the week next week, Tim.
It could be.
Maybe.
There you go.
Come on. Shh. Let's talk about that offline, just in case.
From the pictures here, it looks good.
It looks
like it might be a useful app for producing podcasts on your iPhone or iPad.
Interesting.
Or if you're a musician, to record your stuff easily.
Yeah, I think that's really where it's positioned, is this sort of musician deal. So
yeah. Well, and our final big story here is the Microsoft kicks off an Office Insider program for Mac users. You can already do that with Windows and Android Office users, but so we'll be able to see sneak previews of new features.
Right. You opt into it, and then it pushes you basically beta versions of all the software.
Right, right.
Before it goes on the release channel.
All right. I don't know about you guys. Can I just throw something in here?
Sure.
Before we kind of pontificate about this. The one thing, you know that I've been talking about how awesome I think Windows 10 is and how impressed I am with Office 365. Mm-hmm. I use it a lot. I have to also create. I build them in Keynote, but I have to deliver them in PowerPoint for certain clients, and they work seamlessly under Windows. It's the binary file compatibility is fabulous. That's great, except every 2 to 3 weeks there are major updates, and things are like a gig or a gig and a half.
Yeah, I mean that's always been the rap for Microsoft.
My God,
constant updating crap. So
and I was traveling, and so I'm on this my little Verizon hotspot. I bought a hotspot rather than keep using the one on my iPad, and here's this thing. It's a gig and a half. It's like I only have 2 gigs left. I'm not doing that through the hotspot. And so, but it's like, come on, seriously. I don't know why they do that, but anyway, it'll be cool to
don't join the Office Insider because you get more updates with this.
More updates.
That would
be relentless.
They're frequent.
Yep, it would be incredible.
That's why they call it Patch Tuesday.
That's right.
Every Tuesday, if you're on Windows, just saying.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, Phil?
Yes.
I think it's time to open the barn doors.
Do open the barn doors. Let them out.
Steve's security tip of the week.
All right. So here is my security tip this week, which is how to really erase your external hard drive, even if it's an SSD. And this is also for internal SSDs. And this came to me because one of my six sister-in-laws asked me about selling a computer. And I asked her what kind of drive was in there. And she said, it's an SSD, a solid state drive. I said, okay, because I haven't had to do this yet, but I've been concerned because there's something about SSDs called wear leveling. And it's because if you use traditional ways of overwriting a disk before you sell the computer or get rid of the disk or give it away, you want to make sure that you delete all the information, all the files, because if you just throw them in the trash and empty the trash, it just takes the directory information off and leaves the file there, and so it can be recovered, right? And so I went off and did a whole bunch of research to figure out, is there a secure method of doing it? And I noticed even on the Mac, on my Macs that run SSDs, the secure empty trash command's been removed because the old secure empty trash method actually creates wear on the SSD. And I'm not going to dive into a lot of technical stuff. I'm actually going to put a link to a ZDNet article about how to really erase any drive, even SSDs, in 2016. And the punchline is you use encryption, BitLocker on Windows or FileVault on the Mac, and you encrypt, you reformat, and you encrypt again. And then you can reformat and sell the computer. And that will actually erase the blocks, erase the data on the blocks. There's still argument about all the different nuances, and I'm putting in some bonus links for technical users, there's an ATA Secure Erase command that is good for SSDs. And then I'm going to put in three papers. I know nobody's going to read this except people who are technical, but it's the NIST guidelines for media sanitation and how to reliably erase drives and why encryption alone is not a solution for sanitizing SSDs. But anyway, if you're going to sell your laptop and it's got an SSD drive in it, just follow the ZDNet protocol. Just encrypt, reformat, encrypt again, and then I would just reformat one more time and throw the new operating system on there and sell it.
And there you go.
It's a fast way to do it, and that's my tip.
It's a good one.
A good tip.
Well, if you want the nuclear option, so this is if you're going to totally get rid of it, I'm going to drop a link in here to a Tech Thing episode where they use thermite, hydrochloric acid.
This is good.
And hammers.
Good.
And hammers.
To totally destroy.
Thank you, Tim.
Hard drives.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Elliott, adding value to the security tip of the week. Thank you.
There you go.
I'm going to rename this really... Steve and Tim's security tip of the week.
Steve's in charge of finesse. Tim's in charge of pure brute force.
That's so right. Over the holiday, they pre-tape episodes. So they do evergreen stuff. And they did this one, and I was watching it December, and I was just chuckling with, really? Using thermite to burn a hard drive. It actually melts it down.
It's oh, crazy. My God.
And hydrochloric acid was also used.
So. Yeah.
Oh, sure, because everything goes better with hydrochloric acid.
That's right.
Incredible. So
make sure you wear your eye protection if you do this.
Well, and I've seen, Patrick Norton on Tech Thing. I've seen him once where he had a drive and he smashed it with a hammer. And, of course, the thing was made out of glass. And these shards of glass go everywhere in the studio. And he's like, I'm not doing that again. You know, because there's the old, hey, let's you know, put a 10-penny nail, drive that through the Winchester spinning hard drive. And that's great, except they're glass now. You know, a lot of them are this real hard glass platter. Anyway, so let's talk about our cool things of the week.
Yes, let's do. Let's start with Tim.
Tim, speak.
Well, I'm really interested in very low cost computers that are targeted at the developing world that you know just try to give the basics, so word processing and you know doing email and the web, not necessarily the most powerful things, but ones that kind of fill a need. And this one's called Endless. I ran across this week, and they're cool looking, very small computers that are running a flavor of Linux that transforms any kind of screen. So they're targeted at HDMI TV screens into a full computer. And they start at $80 and they go to about $200 depending on which model you get.
This is brilliant.
It's a good idea. And it's targeted again at the developing world, but I think it's cool.
So you know? this is to assume, okay, this is to assume that not only do the people in the developing world, the poor, the impoverished, the hungry, have money to buy this computer, but they also have to have an HDMI compatible TV.
that's not a huge stretch though. I mean, if you buy any, I mean, it works with composite video as well, so you could hook it up to an old tube set if you wanted to.
Okay,
right. But your resolution might be a problem at that point.
Well, I've seen, in fact, at Micro Center they had a great big bin full of keyboards and mice. They were in a box. You know, each one was in a box. $39 for a keyboard with a two-button mouse. And then they had monitors or displays, not HDMI. They were, I think they were DVI and VGA. But those were $49.
Really?
For the displays. Wow. So when I just looked at this, just the $79 one, you know, geez, for under $200, you could have a full-blown desktop computer.
You could.
We just need to get those people from Bangladesh over to Micro Center.
But my point is, if you bought enough of them for a classroom or something, thanks,
this $79 one, though, doesn't have any kind of networking, so it doesn't have Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. So it's a standalone unit only, and it only has 24 gigs of storage. The 32 gig model, which is $100, has the all the radios for the wireless, which I would think that would sort of be the entry level for most people.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yep.
But as they talk about, if you're a farmer living in some, you know, place out in the middle of nowhere, this one that doesn't have any networking would be fine. You're running your applications that you need to run your farm. And, you know, remember back in the day in the, you know, 70s and 80s, farmers here in the U.S. used Apple IIs in much the same way.
Yeah, they sure did.
So I think that when I run across a project like this, I just like to bring it up and tell people about it, because I think it's a great idea, and hopefully these guys will you know, do something with it. So I think this started out to be like a Kickstarter-y kind of a thing, but now it looks like it's a real business.
Cool. Mr. Phil.
Well, I feel kind of bad because mine actually has no...
No redeeming value.
Redeeming value at all.
No intrinsic worldwide.
We've come to expect that from you, Phil.
Okay, so here it is. You know, because many in third world nations are looking for ways to clean their grill.
That's right.
I thought this was kind of cool. The GrillBot. You guys are familiar with the Roomba, of course.
Yeah.
Well, GrillBot's kind of the same sort of deal for your grill. You just kind of turn it on and it scrubs your grill.
Oh, man.
Interesting.
I find this interesting, but I can't imagine it really works all that well.
$130, too.
Yeah. Wow.
So if you have money to burn and you don't want to buy a $2 grill brush that you can buy anywhere, right?
Yeah, but see, you have to provide elbow grease. I mean, just the brush is half the battle, Tim.
But that's half the fun of grilling, though. It's half the fun of grilling. It's like to get all the burned on stuff and heat up the grill and have it burn off, and then
you can sit at your patio table with a cold beer, watching your grill bot clean.
Yeah.
God. All right.
Kids. It's all about the kids.
It is all about the kids.
So, Steve.
Oh, man.
Well, mine was, or mine is, something called TorFlow. And if you don't
Which
know
is
what.
Really cool as shit to look at, but what am I looking at here, Steve?
Okay. So, what you're looking at is, and so we'll put a link in the show notes so everyone. What Tor is, of course, is the onion router. It's a way to securely hide while you're on the internet and essentially be invisible to anyone tracking you and so forth. And what TorFlow is,
you got to have it if you're gonna spend a lot of time on torrents, right?
Well, okay, that's no, actually, because if you start to use BitTorrent, your IP can be discovered, so you don't want to don't do BitTorrent anyway.
Well, do it for legitimate purposes, like downloading Debian.
There you go.
If you're doing that, by all means, use BitTorrent.
What TorFlow? Let me talk about my cool thing, guys. So what TorFlow is?
Don't get this thing. Yeah.
Well, it's literally showing the flow of torrent use. So this is the flow of packets happening, and it's a visualization. Everyone, it's a world map, and it shows. These colored dots going back and forth between cities. It's kind of cool because you can see in Europe, for example, it's white hot between London and Paris, for example, to Berlin and Amsterdam and all of that. So European users are really, really heavily using Tor to access. And what was interesting is in the center of the United States in Kansas City, there's a lot of activity in Los Angeles and down in South Carolina and so on.
There's Steve's house.
Yeah. But what was interesting to me is during the week, the flow from Dallas to Kansas City is almost white hot. And I can't figure out why, unless there's some sort of a backbone that goes between Dallas and Kansas City. But this is really interesting because it's showing that, you know, first of all, not everyone in all these cities is a terrorist or a child porn user, which is how everyone is always portrayed if they use Tor. This is showing that there are literally are millions of people using Tor all the time. And that's my cool thing.
So, Steve?
Yes.
How do you know this just isn't an endless video loop?
Because it changes dynamically all the time. And you can click on a given city and it shows how many relays at the location and all of that, and how much activity is going on and so forth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What's that location right in the middle of the U.S.? That's
Kansas City.
It's Kansas City.
Oh, it is. Okay. Yeah. Why? That must be an internet drain right there then that goes worldwide.
It must be. It must be a backbone hub of some kind.
Yeah, because Boston, New York, Washington.
What is that one on the lower coast, lower south east seaboard?
I think that's
there.
Charleston. It's Charleston or Savannah, one of the two. This is very interesting.
Yeah,
I'm still not 100% sure what I'm looking at, but okay.
Well,
it's
again,
just a lot of stuff. I mean, a lot of
It's Charleston.
Look at that Ivory Coast, and it's crazy if you look at the Islamic world here in Northern Africa. There's hardly any action going on, but of course, when you get down into like Israel, there is a bit of action. But Ivory Coast, what the heck is going on there?
Yeah, I don't know.
Something's up.
Yeah.
Just telling you. Something's up.
Something's up.
Something's up in Ivory Coast. Keep an eye on it.
That's right.
Interesting stuff.
Upcoming events. What's new? So Mini Demo 22?
Yep, yeah, that is new.
On February 18th?
Yep. It says new.
And
at the Depot.
Yep.
There'll be tickets go up a couple weeks from now, I think.
I think so.
Yeah. I think that I just
I'll do a couple of drops.
Just got the call for presenters, so I don't know. It's be interesting to see who's going to present this year their demo.
Yeah.
DevFest is coming up in a couple of weeks. Don't want to miss that. I run Mobile Twin Cities out of BuzzFeed, and we have Overcoming the Gender Gap in Mobile Tech. Nancy Lyons is leading a discission in that.
She's a fun speaker, by the way.
That is going to be crowded. So I've actually had to put a cap on tickets for that. So go ahead and obviously it's free, but it's so we'll have some attrition. But at the same time, this is Nancy is a great speaker, and this is a real hot button. And as I explained last week, Steve, I was trying to say that we really want to have people walk out of there with stuff that they can do to help overcome the gender gap, and not just
more
something that everybody can more lip service. Because I think that's the problem. We talk a great game, but it's still not good. I'm on the tech advisory council here for Lakeville Schools, and we talk a lot about our STEM programs and STEAM programs, and there's great programs being worked on and labbed and established, especially at Lakeville South right now, and they have like 120 kids involved in this STEM program, and like 4 of them are women, so it's not good. So we need to do more. But anyway, that's all there is to it.
All right.
Did I go on long enough about that?
Yes.
Steve, I was going to ask you, IoT Fuse, there's a new site for you guys, but it's more than just the event. I mean, Fuse is it's not just one event, it looks like. It looks like you guys are planning more things other than the one IoT Fuse event.
Yeah, actually, there's a rebranding going on of IoT Minneapolis and also the Arduino MN group. And so we're going to be moving, the hackathons and the meetups and all of that are going to be all under the IoT Fuse umbrella.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And so we'll soon be obtaining our official 501c3 status. So we'll be a nonprofit. And and then the conference is coming up. And so should be fun.
Nice. Congratulations, Steve.
Thanks. Mm.
Well done. Well done.
Wow, there's a guy named Steve Borsch who posts a lot on their blog there too.
Yeah, he's kind of a dweeb, but I shouldn't say that about anyone, especially myself. Okay. Good. Well,
it's a dweeb.
I guess we'll have to
sort of a dated term.
You know, it is sort of, isn't it?
Well, yeah, he's got a big guy, so it's okay.
All right. Well, I guess you guys will have to abuse me next week on
the Minovate Gang podcast.
All right. Take care. Ya.